Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Larry Pinkney. Larry is a longtime activist. He's on, as I like to say, on the right side of history. Larry, it's great to have you on. There's so much going on. We exchanged a few comments before the program today, and I'm focused, of course, always on the Ukraine situation. It is, without question, the major story going on in the world. It's a global flashpoint. There's a risk of serious conflict breaking out, and I wrote an article. I'll make a few comments about it on Obama's duplicitous speech in Brussels yesterday. From beginning to, well, we've talked a lot about Obama, Larry. We're certainly on sync in our feelings about him. His speech, like all of his speeches, all of his addresses, beginning to end, demagogic boilerplate, beginning to end, a litany of lies. It was a disgraceful performance, and of course the major media scoundrels praise what they should condemn. Larry, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much, Stephen. It's always a distinct pleasure being or sharing time with you on your show. You're absolutely correct with respect to the matter in what's really more than a matter, the outrageous situation in Ukraine. And, of course, the Obamatron, Barack Obama, up to his old tricks of lie, lie, and lie some more. So I think that you hit the nail on the head, as it were. Also, with respect to, I like the fact that you use the word the flashpoint, because I doubt how many people, I really doubt if there are very many people who understand that we are on the brink of a thermonuclear war. If Obama continues to push his insanity, he continues to tell his lies, and of course the corporate stream media, really, which is nothing more than the Democrat and Republican Party's handmaiden, the corporate stream media laps it up and puts out this constant vomit, and that's all it is. It's vomit. It's lies. And to call Obama's speech duplicitous, I believe, quite frankly, is being very, very diplomatic. Indeed, it was duplicitous or duplicitous, but the reality is that Obama is taking us quickly to a situation where we could find ourselves extinct.
Larry, you're absolutely right, and I think you really struck the right word in calling the comments coming out of the corporate media, scoundrel media, vomit. I think that really explains it. But the words coming out of Obama's mouth, I think absolutely amounts to vomit as well. Let me give you this may have been the most outrageous thing he said, and I quoted him verbatim in the article that I'll put out tomorrow, and I'm titling it, "Obama Sells Confrontation with Russia." He sure as hell is. And of course, the scoundrel media lap it up, and they regurgitate the crap, the vomit, and literally, they just escalate the possibility for a serious conflict ahead. But this is one. This may have been the most outrageous comment Obama said. He said, "America, my word, quote, believes in democracy with elections that are free and fair, and independent judiciaries, and opposition parties, civil society, and uncensored information, so that individuals can make their own choices. Yes." We believe in open economies based on free markets and innovation and individual innovative and entrepreneurship and trade and investment that creates a broader prosperity. And yes, we believe in human dignity, that every person is created equal, no matter who you are and no matter what you look like or no matter who you love or where you come from. That is what we believe. That is what makes us strong. And our enduring strength is also reflected in our respect for an international system that protects the rights of both nations and people, a United Nations, and a Universal Declaration of Human Rights, international law, and the means to enforce those laws. Can you believe that vomit?
No, I mean, if it weren't so damn serious, it would actually be comedy. It would be laughable. But unfortunately, it is extremely serious. And Obama, as I said earlier, has taken the truth and literally turned the truth on its head. This nonsense about believing in the Universal Declaration of Independence is absolutely Universal Declaration of Human Rights is absolutely ridiculous. Not to mention the fact Not to mention the fact, Stephen, that the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights is also a United Nations covenant that the United States and the EU, but particularly the U.S., constantly and egregiously violates on a regular basis. So the man, if indeed that's what he is, I will say the creature, Obama, is, of course, doing what his predecessor did, only he's doing it on steroids. That's to say, Obama's doing it on steroids, and that is, as you said, he's selling war. He's selling death. He's selling confrontation. And, of course, as usual, he is selling lies.
Well, he really is, Larry, and to accuse, as he accuses, and John Kerry and other U.S. officials and the major media ecosystem makes the same accusations, wrongfully accusing Russia of invading Crimea. Well, Russia invaded nothing. Accusing Russia of aggression, quote-unquote aggression. There was no Russian aggression committed. And what's omitted from the major media reports is that there was a true exercise in democracy in Ukraine. A true exercise. A week ago Sunday, I believe the day was, the time passes so quickly, and 96.77%, that percentage just sticks in my mind, Larry, 96.7% of Crimeans voted for reunification with Russia. Traditionally, Crimea has always been part of Russia, going back to the 18th century or so, and because Khrushchev in 1954 just handed it over to Ukraine, never imagining that Ukraine would be disassociated from Russia and become an independent country to be able to do whatever it wanted, including allying with the West against the East. He never imagined anything like that. It still was a very, very big mistake. He shouldn't have done it, but you know, that's spilt milk. But Crimeans felt that, you know, they felt they were betrayed. This never should have happened. The Crimeans, they were allied with Russia. That's where they want to be. And the turnout in the referendum, absolutely astonishing. A typical turnout in America, Larry, in a presidential election, hovering around 50%. If it ever hit in the high 50s, I think in 2008 it hit 58%, if I remember, Obama against George Bush. I mean, anything but Bush was the sloganeering going around then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it hit 58%. In an off-year election, it's usually less than 50%. So half the electorate just decides it's a waste of time to vote in an election that's rigged, and it absolutely is rigged. It was rigged for Bush to win twice. They didn't need to rig it for Obama, but they did anyway. I mean, they rigged it to make him the nominee. The perfect time for the emergence of a black president who governs worse than a white one, Larry, throughout history. And he did win by a strong majority, but 82% in Crimea. I mean, that is astonishing. I mean, Crimeans, even the Ukrainian population, the Tatar population, an awful lot of both of those populations came out and voted to join Russia to get away from Ukraine. And do you blame them, Larry? We have illegitimate. One comment, then you jump in. Go ahead.
You know, Stephen, it's incredible how once again we see the corporate stream media just blatantly lying. And of course, you can lie in many ways. One of the ways that the U.S. corporate stream media lies is it lies through omission. So of course, it's not going to carry the high percentage of the voter turnout in Crimea, or for that matter, even with respect to what you were saying about Ukraine, in terms of folks saying, wait a minute, yes, we do want to be a part of Russia. But you know, something else is very interesting, and I think is worth noting, and that is that NATO, the U.S.-led so-called North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is nothing more than an imperialist power bent on controlling the economies of the world. But in any event, a promise had been made by the United States to to, of all people, Gorbachev, that NATO would not be expanding. Of course, that too was a lie. NATO has continued to expand. It has an insatiable appetite. The U.S. has an insatiable, it's an empire. It's doing what empires do. Obama, I wrote an article quite some time ago referring to Obama as the head of the empire, at least the mouthpiece, the poster child, if you will, for this empire. And as you said, here he is, a so-called black person. I want to just be clear, Obama is neither politically nor culturally black. Struggle, he does not come from a tradition of peace and justice or social justice. He does not come from any of that, any of that. He is only, if indeed one can call him black, then one must say he is nominally black, okay? But, no, having said that, he acts as the perfect, in quotation marks, perfect stooge, willing puppet for the imperialist powers, okay, for the power elite, as it were, to continue their crimes, because that's what they are. They are nothing more than crimes. First of all, the United States needs to be minding its own damn business. You don't need to be thousands and thousands of miles there interfering in an exercise of democracy, and that's what the U.S. is doing, is subverting democracy, the U.S. and its EU friends. They're subverting democracy. They dare to use that term. That is, again, it's vomit. It's sickening. It's disgusting.
Larry, it really is. And the notion that Washington's dirty hands manipulated everything that has gone on in Ukraine since last year when the protests erupted last November. Well, the plans to make them erupt were well in place before they ever did materialize. That's the way those things begin. When a war begins, and nothing in the way of war or anything that involves serious planning to be sure that things go according to the way the operatives want it to go. It takes many weeks, usually months, to plan something like this. The war in Afghanistan, 9/11, 5 weeks after the war, after 9/11, the war in Afghanistan began, forget the precise date, in October, call it around mid-October, maybe it was 4 weeks after the 9/11 event. That war was planned at least 6 months in advance, and simply the pretext was created to go to war with a country that America wanted to change the regime and put in a friendly one, a pro-Western one, a puppet one, and the regime running Ukraine, Afghanistan today, the Karzai regime. You never hear a word in the major scoundrel media that Karzai was a former, well, he still is, a CIA asset mm-hmm. is distinguished from an agent. Asset means they give millions of bucks and they say do it our way, and he says thank you very much, what would you like me to do? And he was also mm-hmm. a former Union Oil he was connected in some way. I don't remember exactly what his relationship was, but the scheme in Ukraine planned at least many weeks in advance. If they could have convinced the legitimate president Viktor Yanukovych to go along with their plan, then they simply suspend it, they put it in the hopper, haul it out again, revise it if necessary. There's been a war plan against Iran for many years. It's never been used. It's been revised from time to time, and it could be hauled out any time. My God, I mean, America has half its military in the Middle East. Certainly could go to war with Iran. But you've got these illegal putschists, a bunch of them neo-Nazis, most of them fascists, ultra-nationalists, mm-hmm. xenophobic. Just an outrageous bunch of extreme. I call Ukraine's government what it is. It's mob rule. That's what it is. And Washington manipulated it. Washington supports it. And these are the people that are being portrayed out as Democrats. My God, Larry, it's astonishing. The U.S. public, when the devil are they going to wake up and do something? I don't know what people believe, Larry, but they're certainly dismissive about what's going on, and they're not showing their anger the way they used to that I remember in the 1960s and 1970s. If we ever needed it, we really need it now.
Yes, well, I think that the word that you use in terms of dismissive, I think in the 21st century we're seeing more and more people being dismissive. We need people, all of us, to go beyond being merely dismissive to proactively saying we are not going to accept this insanity, either nationally or internationally. And we need to understand, we as a people in this country, that we're being led down the path once again, this time by a nominally black president, nominally, okay, who is, you know, basically, who is a willing puppet for the power elite. And we have to understand how dangerous a situation this is. This is not just about Crimea or Russia. This is about that entire region. This also happens to be about China, because it's all about encircling, if you will, encircling these nations. In this case, they're trying to, this country, this government is trying to lop off piece by piece any democratic government, any government that does not agree with the United States. They are deemed to be what? Undemocratic. When in fact, you know, it's just the opposite. The reality is that the United States is the undemocratic government. Democracy. What a word to come out of Obama's mouth. Why, he wouldn't know the meaning of the word, just like he doesn't even know the meaning of the word truth. But again, we need to emphasize the danger that this once again is leading us to. This is not World War One or World War Two. This is the age of thermonuclear power and all its weapons, I should say, and all it takes is simply one mistake to set it off. One mistake.
Well, Larry, that is right, and I'm reminded all the time. I wasn't old enough to remember, but I've certainly read about it and quoted from marvelous books and articles that have written about World War One, where literally events, one event led to another, and all of a sudden we had an eruption, and two countries decided they wanted to go to war with each other, and an ally of one jumped in, and then an ally of the other jumped in on the other side, and so on and so forth, and all of a sudden you had a bunch of countries on either side going to war with each other, and we later gave it a name. We called it World War One. 20, 25 million men, mostly men, were, well, 20 to 25 million people were murdered. They were mostly civilians, which included plenty of women, children, the elderly, the infirm, and an entire generation of youth. An entire generation was lost. And as bad as World War One, Larry, was, and we know, World War Two was infinitely worse. Infinitely worse. And the weapons that were used in both those wars were toys compared to the weapons available now. Nuclear right. weapons didn't come into use until the war was over. Germany had already surrendered. Japan tried to surrender months earlier. Roosevelt, while he was alive, turned them down. Truman turned them down. The generals wanted to play with their toys. They wanted to use them in real time. So they incinerated hundreds of thousands of Japanese civilians just to prove they had a super weapon and to send the message to Soviet Russia, aha, we've got this thing, and we're showing you we can use it, and we can use it to you. Well, the Russians knew we had it. They were well on their way to their own bomb. They don't... Stalin was no fool. He may have been a ruthless tyrant, but he was no damn fool. And he knows he knew the way America waged war. And indeed, America could have lobbed nuclear bombs against Russia, China too. And in the Korean War, I do remember the Korean War very well. I was in college. I remember World War II, but mostly the latter part of it, not the beginning. I was only 5 years old when it began. But I remember Douglas MacArthur wanting to use nuclear weapons against North Korea after literally he turned North Korea to rubble. He and his successor, General Ridgway, if I remember the name, turned North Korea to rubble. They literally ran out of targets. The country, literally the cities, the villages, the surrounding areas turned to rubble, and MacArthur wanted to use nuclear weapons. He wanted to explode them around across the Russian, North Korean border. well, the only good thing I think Truman, well, maybe the best thing Truman did in his tenure was to fire MacArthur. Larry, I mean, imagine if that guy had ever become president. He may have been a good general, but he sure didn't know anything about saving human life, nor did he care about it.
No, not at all. In fact, you know, occasionally I watch the so-called comedy series MASH. I'm sure you've heard about that.
Oh, yeah.
And I happened to be looking at it the other day, and it just, I cringed because while I do certainly agree with the message that MASH, I think, tries to put across of the futility of war, I disagree, of course, with much of the propaganda, but it also puts across that the Americans were just there to be saviors, to be helpers, take care of both the North Koreans and the South Koreans. In fact, I thought about the movie, the DVD that I've mentioned on your show before called Ghosts of Jeju Island that goes into some detail about the horrible history in terms of the United States and the massacres that the U.S. engaged in, which, of course, that's a part of empire. That's what empires do. Sort of like the song that came out in the 60s, here was America in Vietnam, trying to save Vietnam against the Vietnamese. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Same thing, of course, in Korea. The same thing, of course, today in Ukraine, trying to keep Ukraine away from the everyday, ordinary Ukrainian people. And this is the same old thing. The same old, it's a repetition of what empires do, but I hasten to add, I keep saying this is not World War I or World War II. This is the age of thermonuclear weapons. One nuclear submarine carries more firepower than all the firepower used in World War II. Think about that. One nuclear submarine. Because of the missiles that those subs carry, not to mention the nuclear-tipped torpedoes, this is just one. That's if people would just stop and think about it, okay? Between the United States, Russia, China, and other nuclear powers, there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of such subs in existence. That's not to mention cruisers, missile cruisers. That's not to mention land-based weapons. It only takes an instant, one mistake, and this time it wouldn't even be days. It would be a matter of minutes before you started receiving or seeing a military response. And that would be essentially the end of our species as we know it.
Larry, it certainly would, and I have read about and written about nuclear winter, where literally, in a matter of hours, enough thermonuclear weapons, hydrogen bombs, could be fired off, and these missiles that are in submarines, that are in bunkers on various bases around the world, they carry multiple warheads. They could either carry lower density nuclear bombs, or they can carry very powerful hydrogen bombs, and you fire off one of these missiles with multiple warheads, fire off a bunch of them, and literally in a matter of hours, you could create conditions for nuclear winter. And nuclear winter is simply this, the end of humanity. And the most chilling movie I ever saw in my life was produced in the 1950s. I don't know the precise date, but I saw it at the time. And once in a great while, it shows up on late night television. It's called On the Beach. Gregory
yes.
Peck, Ava Gardner,
yes.
Fred Astaire. No dancing in this movie. He commits suicide at the end. Imagine a Fred Astaire movie where he commits suicide at the end. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because nuclear winter is descended. And where he is in Australia, it's down under. It's the last place to be hit. And the end of the film, but just before the end, it shows a city in Australia with anti-nuclear protests, as I remember. Lots of people around, lots of people, lots of activity. This was a little bit before the end. And then near the final scene in the movie, I don't know if it was a precise final scene, but near the end, near the one of the final scenes, you flash back to that same city, to that same spot, and the streets are deserted, and all you see is the effect of the wind blowing and papers blowing down deserted streets. And that's what
right.
nuclear winter is. The buildings
right.
are left standing, humanity is destroyed, and people are literally risking the possibility that they will extinguish life on Earth. I'm not sure, I don't think anybody wants this, but who wanted World War I? Who wanted World
right.
War II? Anything
right.
can happen, and these lunatics, because of their policies, literally can cause it to happen. I don't want to be young, Larry. I feel sorry for people who are young today.
Well, I certainly feel for the young, but I tell you what, if the young want to become anywhere near my age or your age, they better damn well be out there saying no, that they're not going to accept this insanity. And the word lunatic is absolutely correct. We have a lunatic in the White House, both Obama and Biden, they are lunatics. We have a lunatic Congress, both the House and the Senate. These people are lunatics. And lunatics are capable, they do not function according to logic. That logic has nothing to do with it. They function, in this case, according to greed, imperialism, empire power. And this will, can, I hope it will not, but it can invariably lead to all-out thermonuclear war. And, you know, I keep saying this, it only takes one missile, and I'm not talking about even a missile with multi-warheads on it. Most submarines, U.S. submarines and Russian submarines, carry between 12 and 24 long-range missiles with multi-warheads, nuclear warheads. Imagine the devastation that can be caused. And imagine there'll be no time to say, oops, mistake. It doesn't work like that. And, or oops, we didn't mean this, but by creating hysteria, and that's what this Obama insane lunatic is doing, this articulate insane lunatic Obama, he's creating, along with Biden, along with John Kerry, along with the rest of these lunatics, are creating an atmosphere of hysteria. And they're using, of course, blatant lies and propaganda to do this. One has to ask oneself, when will this stop? The answer is only when we, the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, say no damn more. No damn more. Okay? If we are. So getting back to the young folk, the young folk had better understand it right now. Better understand that what's at stake is the existence of humanity, is the existence of our precious planet, Mother Earth.
Yeah, we really do, Larry. This is a time for disruptive protest, civil disobedience. If it was good enough for people like Thoreau and John Locke and others in history, it certainly is good enough for us. Now, this is the only way to stop them, I agree. These people are out of control. They'll do anything they want, and they distract us with bread and circuses and lies and so on, and the major media simply bury the important truths and feed us rubbish in replace of it. But we really are going through them, what I believe, sincerely believe is the most perilous time in world history. Throughout the entire Cold War, Larry, and I lived through all of, my goodness, I certainly did live through all of it, began probably in 1946. Winston Churchill, if anybody gets credit with launching the Cold War, it's probably Winston Churchill. He's the one who coined, he didn't invent the term, but he used the term, an iron curtain
mm-hmm.
curtain has descended on Eastern Europe. From Trieste, he said, to the Balkans, and he went on. He gave a speech at a small college in Fulton, Missouri. And in a
right.
recent article, I went back, and I quoted him before from that. In a recent article, I went back, and I quoted him again. My article, I called it Containing Russia. I mean, Winston Churchill literally did this. I mean, we could have had a wonderful relationship. There never had to be a Cold War, but he used the term. The Cold War started. I remember it. I never once remember being scared. that we really might get into World War III during all those years. We had, you remember, Larry, what was called MAD, Mutually
right.
Assured Destruction. Neither
right.
side would dare attack the other because it would mean the end of both of them. And there were crazies around then, but in the
right.
early 1960s, Larry, we had somebody named Jack Kennedy. And Jack Kennedy, we also had crazies like General Curtis LeMay and others mm-hmm. like him who wanted to nuke the Russians while we had an advantage. And Kennedy was so enraged, he wanted nothing to do with these people. He wouldn't listen to them. He wanted them ignored. He once stormed out of a National Security Council meeting, just absolutely infuriated with the comments that were being made about attacking Russia, about another Bay of Pigs against Cuba. That was Jack Kennedy. He wanted total disarmament. He wanted getting rid of all nuclear weapons. He supported Palestinian rights. He has so many things on his plate. That's the reason the CIA murdered him. He wanted 1,000 U.S. forces out of Southeast Asia by the end of 1963. My God, 5 weeks before the year ended, he was dead. By the end of 1965,
right.
he wanted them all
mm-hmm.
out. He wanted nothing to do with Southeast Asian wars. Well, you know, the war profiteers had other ideas, and Kennedy was murdered. And anybody alive as I was and old enough certainly will never remember that day, Larry. Indeed, I'll never forget that day or where I
right.
was or the fact that I was at work and the fact that everything, the entire city, came to an absolute standstill. But we don't have Jack Kennedy around today, and that's why I worry.
Yes, yes. I too remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when he was murdered by the CIA, by the government, by these creatures, okay, who, if anything, have grown even more powerful today in the 21st century. Not only more powerful, but quite frankly, more insane. I go back to what you had said, Stephen, about young people. Young people have got to really understand that at stake is their very existence. You know, you turn on the tube, the telly, and what do you see? You see nonsense. You see nonsense, you American Idol. Anything, bread and circuses, as you called it correctly, bread and circuses, anything but the truth. ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, Fox News, all of them are nothing more than bread and circuses. Indeed, this is the new opium, if you will, for the people, the new opium. And we have got to do all that we can as quickly as we can to get ourselves out of this blind stupor, and young people in particular, you know, they've been so dumbed down. There are some out there who are awakening, and that is wonderful, but we need that critical mass. We need more quickly to awaken, and not just awaken, but to connect with each other and say no. Say no. We've got to get over this nonsense about, and I'm just going to say it like it is, as a black American, I'm going to say it like it is, this insane gangster, Barack Obama, this, it's an insult to even refer to him as black. It's an insult to James Meredith. It's an insult to Dr. Martin Luther King. It's an insult to Malcolm X. It's an insult to the millions of indigenous native peoples, or as the Canadians refer to them, the First Nation peoples, who have been the victims of murder. It's an insult to even refer to this creature as black. And because black is more than a color. It's a state of mind, a state of being, a state of consciousness. It is time for us to get over this and to understand that we had better link with one another if we are to survive, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. And we better do it quickly. Quickly. Turn off the damn telly. Stop reading the vomit in the media. Stop going for the ghosts. Start being our own citizen journalists. Start, you know, working with each other in terms of telling each other information, for example, what's happening in Ukraine. Because what's happening in Ukraine is not merely Ukraine. People need to understand that. Ukraine is a flashpoint, and it could be the flashpoint of the beginning of the end of humanity, but we cannot allow that to happen. We cannot.
Indeed, Larry, just a couple of points. Again, I remember, and you remember so well, the time of the 60s and the early 70s, and I would say that the murder of JFK and Bobby and Martin and Malcolm X decapitated the political left. And the problem, as I see it, the key problem is there's no leadership today directing people. If we ever needed Martin and his great eloquence, oh, do we need him now? And as far as a president, do we ever need a JFK who literally came into the White House a cold warrior? He was a cold warrior, and he transformed before too very long into a peacemaker. You know, the old idea of transforming weapons into plowshares. That's exactly what happened to him. And I don't know what precipitated or what brought about his spiritual and political transformation. But it happened. It was absolutely astonishing. I don't think it ever happened before to a U.S. president. It would be astonishing to happen with anyone, but it happened to him. A key second point for me is that, well, the dismissiveness of most U.S. people. I wonder how many Americans ever heard of Ukraine, and of those who had, I wonder who had any idea where it is. I'm not certain how many know where it is now, and even though most Americans, I would guess, know there's a country called Ukraine, and it's somewhere in Europe, probably close to Russia, probably close to some of the Western countries, but they're really not sure, and I doubt that 1 in 100 Americans bother to look up Ukraine on a map, which is so simple to do with anybody with a computer. And before I had a computer, I had an atlas. I could look up any country or region, and I used it for that region just to spot things I wanted to, or look up cities, or see exactly what countries bordered another country, things like that. But you could do it easily online. Americans don't do that. They simply don't realize the gravity of the situation going on. And I really, the time goes by so quickly, Larry, if I may, let me segue to a sub-Ukraine story, which is the raping and pillaging of the story, which is part of the chapter. Part of the chapter is the geopolitical jousting, the confrontation between East and West, mainly America and Russia, with EU countries dragged along, whether they want to or not, to go along with U.S. policy. That's why Obama's been trekking around Europe this week, and with the Pope today, and visiting Saudi Arabia tomorrow. My goodness, the dredges of the earth this guy associates with. But he drags other countries along to go with the U.S. agenda. And, well, there he is. He'll come home on Saturday. The strip mining of Ukraine, the IMF has offered a package, $14 to $18 billion. It is no lie, yes, Larry. IMF, Gerald Celente has the right definition of the IMF, and I have an article tomorrow on this plundering going out tomorrow. I've got two articles on Ukraine tomorrow, one called Plundering Ukraine for Profit, and another, Obama Sells Confrontation with Russia. But Celente calls the IMF the loan shark of last resort.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's a wonderful definition of the IMF.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. It sums it up, because that's precisely not only what the IMF is, but it's precisely how the IMF functions around the globe, a loan shark.
Oh, indeed, Larry, indeed. Here's a snapshot of what getting in bed with the IMF means. You know, it's not like going, you know, with an individual, scale down the numbers. You and I want to buy a home or a car. We go to a local bank. In the old days when I did that, piece of cake, you walk into the bank, if you got a decent credit rating, they give you what you need. I had no trouble getting a home mortgage. I think only one time I borrowed anything to buy a car when they were money. I don't have a car now. I haven't had one in over 20 years. But when I remember one time I bought a car and took a loan. It was a piece of cake. It was nothing. You know, I mean, I had a job, I had a decent income, the amount of money I wanted was very reasonable. They gave me a loan, same for my mortgage loan, a couple of mortgage loans that I got. Very simple going down and applying and so on, very routine, and things are a lot different. Well, that is not what the point I want to make is. Comparing that to doing business with the IMF, I mean, those are two polar opposite experiences. You get in bed with the IMF, and here's what they want. They mandate paying bankers and other major Western investors first, privatizing state enterprises, selling them at fire sale prices, practically giveaways, mass layoffs, deregulation, deep social spending cuts en route to eliminating them altogether, wage freezes or cuts, unrestricted free market access for Western corporations, corporate-friendly tax cuts, tax increases for working households, trained unionism crushed or marginalized, and cash crackdowns against anybody who says, this is unfair. Well, that's tough. They go after you, and they beat your brains out. That's what getting into bed with the IMF means.
That's right. That's right. And I just want to add very quickly that this concept of so-called, and I say so-called quite deliberately, so-called free market, what it actually, of course, is I call it a vampire market. It's a blood-sucking market. There's nothing free about it. In fact, here we go again. It's just the opposite. Free? No, it's exactly the opposite. It's a vampire, blood-sucking market, and it blood-sucks everyday ordinary people in countries around the world, right here, including right here in the United States. But I just wanted to throw that out because they love that term, free market. Free indeed.
Never the word fail, Larry. Always the word free. You know, free. Free for whom? Free for whom? Certainly not for you and me, Larry. Certainly
exactly.
Not for the predator nations and companies and so on that America and its EU partners go after. It's free for them. It sure as hell isn't fair for us.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And they never
Absolutely.
Use the word fair.
Oh, no, fair. My God, that's to use the word fair, in their vocabulary, I'm quite sure, would be considered subversive. Fair? Just? Oh, my God. No, those are subversive terms to these bloodsuckers.
Well, the plunder is beginning. The deal is crafted. It needs officially to be approved by the IMF, but that's rubber stamp, and that may come sometime during April. But the deal is done. Ukraine will get $14 to $18 billion. Congress is promising $1 billion plus $150 million. Congress is guaranteeing $1 billion in loan guarantees. In other words, the same kind of nonsense as IMF debt bondage, and that's what it is, and trapping countries in debt. And the amount of money, well, $1 billion from Congress, another $150 million, which, you know, is like car fare for us, Larry, to go downtown. Maybe discounted car. $150 million for an economy means nothing. Those are guaranteed, maybe with no strings attached. And the EU is kicking in another, I think it was $2.2 billion, with strings. With strings. So all of this comes with strings, and the amounts that are being offered, all it does for Ukraine, I mean, Ukraine is deeply in debt now. All it does is dig a bigger hole because most of this money, most of it, let's say it gets 15, 16, 18, 19 billion, even round it off and call it 20. Most of it does not enter the Ukrainian economy. That's the way the deal works. It goes right back to the bankers and other big investors. I mean, I'm not joking. That's exactly the way this works. So pathetically little goes into the Ukrainian economy. Maybe crumbs enough to pay bureaucrats, minimal numbers of bureaucrats, because many, I don't know how many bureaucrats Ukraine has, but let's say it had 100,000. Probably 80,000 of them would be sacked over a number of months. So there'd be a small, maybe 20% of them would end up being left, and they would get crumbs for wages, and that's where the rest of this money goes, to keep enough bureaucrats employed. So, I mean, somebody's got to keep the trains running on time. My God, I mean, if you have buses, you got to have somebody driving them, all this stuff. So you need bureaucrats at least keeping the economy minimally functioning, so that's where the rest of the money goes, but very little of it. They'll strip away education benefits, healthcare benefits. A few gas prices, as of the 1st of May, Larry, will go up 50%, if you can believe this. 50%. And, forget the name of the Ukraine gas company. Something that ends in G-A-Z, but the Ukrainian gas company, it issued a statement saying other increases will fall 50% increase for a country with people already deeply impoverished, which means they'll freeze in winter. I'm sure they have no air conditioning. This is what the IMF means. But skyrocketing food prices, the Ukrainian currency has plunged about 25% since January 1. It's headed for becoming worthless. This is the deal with Ukraine. And, of course, ordinary people, Larry, will be the ones who suffer most.
And then, Stephen, they're going to turn around. When I say they, I'm talking about the IMF, the U.S. government, people like the Obamatrons, the EU, etc. They're going to turn around, and as the turmoil grows, what are they going to say? They're going to say, well, see, we've got turmoil there, and people are upset because of what we replaced. In other words, they will not indicate that they are the ones who have caused this pain. They are the ones who have brought about this horror upon the everyday ordinary people. And it reminds me of the scenario in Greece right now, in Portugal right now, but especially Greece, what is happening there. And it's continuing to spiral, and it will continue to spiral, only it's going to be far quicker and far worse, if you can believe it, in Ukraine. And this is what we in this country have got to understand. There's a film, I don't know if you've seen it, you can actually watch it online. It's called Lifting the Veil. It actually goes into some kind of detail about what you just described, what the IMF does, how this actually works, et cetera, et cetera. It's called Lifting the Veil. Check it out if you haven't seen it, I would say to the audience. You can, as I said, you can watch it online. You can also get it on DVD. But it just shows, that's why I call them vampiric or vampires. They're bloodsuckers. They are literally bloodsuckers. They're destroying lives. They're destroying generations, all in the name of insatiable greed and lies. So, I mean, I'm just going to stop there. It just makes me so very, very concerned and angry.
Larry, there's so much to talk about, and we've only got about 5 minutes left. It just appalls me, the stuff that goes on. I spend all my time, every single day, 7 days a week, looking into these major stories and wanting to comment about them. And I mentioned another topic to you. We didn't get into it, but I'll mention it briefly. And I think probably many listeners know that the horrors that are going on in a close U.S. ally, another despotic country, one of the worst in the Middle East. I'm talking about Egypt, where yesterday a hanging judge sentenced 539 of I remember the precise numbers, 539 innocent Egyptians to death. I don't know how they're going to kill them, death by hanging, death by firing squad, death by lethal gas. I don't know how they do it in Greece. And the general, the head of the Egyptian junta, a guy named al-Sisi, he just resigned. Well, why did he resign? Because he wants to become president. There hasn't been a date set yet, but he wants to become president. So maybe I don't know what the rules are in Egypt, but he decided to resign. To devote all his time running for the presidency. Well, there's no race for the presidency in Egypt. I mean, Mubarak for 30 years won elections the old-fashioned way. You know, getting 80-90% of the vote, and not getting 100%. I mean, letting somebody else get some votes to cast a little bit of legitimacy, even though none existed on the election. So this guy al-Sisi, who's a lot worse than Mubarak, will be the next president of Egypt, and maybe it'll be around mid-year, whatever he wants it to be. And this is the fate of the Egyptians. And there are 600 more that are on trial, also to be summarily convicted and executed, and more. I mean, wiping out all the opposition in Egypt. If you're against what the ruling party wants, and it's extremely despotic, then you get targeted for elimination. They trump up charges against you. They haul you into court, 500 plus at a time, and they mass convict you. I don't know what they did in ancient Egypt, but in modern Egyptian history, I think in modern human history, there has never been, and I don't think Hitler or Stalin ever mass executed in a courtroom over 500 at one time, but this went on in Egypt. I wrote about it a day ago. These are some of the horrors, and of course, Obama and crew in Washington supports all of it. Larry, a final comment. There's so much more to talk about. We'll do it the next time I get you on.
Well, thank you so very, very much. I think that what we discussed is incredibly timely and incredibly important, my brother. Thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to spending more time with you. Thank you to you, Stephen, to your audience especially, and everyone who makes this program, this show possible. Thank you, brother.
Oh, Larry, it's great to have you on. You really are on the right side of history, and that's one of my favorite expressions. And I just wish everybody would get on that right side. It's one thing to be on that side, Larry, and another, really, to put your body where your convictions are. There are so many different ways to do it. You don't have to go out and protest in the streets. You can do it lots of ways. I mean, I'm not a kid anymore. My God, well, I'm getting to be a fossil. But I do it with my writing and media work. Everybody can do it in some way, and this is the way to change things.
Right, right. Please stay strong and carry on, my brother.
Indeed, Larry. Well, we fight the good fight, and we will continue to fight the good fight. Let me give you the last comment. I always like to give my guests the last comment.
Well, I want people to remember, and I always say this, I want people to remember the words of the late, great Margaret Mead. I think I've said this on your show before, that never doubt that a small group of thoughtful people can make a difference. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. So, end of quote. I want us not to bend our heads or bend our backs and say it's hopeless. It's not hopeless. In fact, you know, at the darkest hour, that may indeed be the time when we uplift ourselves. We, the people, uplift ourselves. And again, to you, my brother Stephen, stay strong. It's a pleasure. It's an honor. And carry on, my brother.
Oh, indeed, Larry, and that's a marvelous Margaret Mead quote. I've certainly quoted her myself and others the same way. We're literally, I mean, disruptive protests, certainly quoted on that, and resisting tyranny is a universal right. We certainly have tyranny in America, Larry, and if we don't do something to resist it, it'll only deepen. We were on a fast track to making it full-blown. There's no question about that. I've watched it. I've written about it incrementally as one police state law after another gets passed, and the only way to stop it is for responsibility. People to literally become disruptive enough, civil disobedience, to change things. And if they don't, America will end up looking like Nazi Germany. Larry, again, my great thanks. I look forward to getting you back. We'll continue this saga, this disgraceful story. It seems like I wish I had something good to talk about sometime. If it ever happens, you and I will get on air and rejoice together. But it certainly isn't happening now. But you and I are on the firing line. Again, my great thanks, Larry.
Thank you. Take care, my brother. Take care, Stephen.
Join us again tomorrow, Sundays Live. Make it a regular habit.